I'm Bob Main, and you're listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. This is a practical show done by a practical guy, and that's me. Try to keep it as informative for you as I possibly can. All right, well, this show starts off with an interesting question, actually. It starts off with a voicemail that I'm going to play for you shortly from a listener. And as you know, I encourage voicemails quite a bit because it helps add a lot of variety to the show. But this man's voicemail kind of gave me the idea for this episode. I got to tell you right up front, this might be the last episode that I do for a few weeks, primarily because of the cancer treatments that I'm about to start pretty much right after you hear this. This is going to come out most likely on Sunday, and let's see, Sunday would be the 13th, I think, of December. I'm driving, so I'm not going to look at a calendar right now and try to figure it out. So I'm going to go ahead and say Merry Christmas to all of you. Again, this is probably going to be my last episode until sometime after Christmas, so Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. I wish you all the very best. I will not, most likely will not be in the hospital on Christmas, but I am going to be receiving a lot of treatments at MD Anderson, mostly on an outpatient basis. Probably not on Christmas Day, but everything, you know, all the days leading right up to Christmas and then right after Christmas. And so I want to tell you guys, I appreciate you. Appreciate all the thoughts and all the prayers that are coming my way and everything. Thank you very much. Thanks for all the encouragement. It really means a lot. I don't know how much you guys understand how much it means. It's hard for me to get back to everybody that sends me an email or a Facebook message, but I try to get back to as many as I can. But it really, 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 really means a lot. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And so, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all of you. All right, so let's take the first voicemail.
Hello, Bob. My name is Eric, and I'm calling with what I believe are very fundamental questions. I've been listening to your show for a couple of weeks now, or probably three or four shows, and a couple of other podcasts. But my questions are this. One, what makes one gun better than another? Because they all seem pretty much the same from my perspective. And two, I hear an awful lot of talk about triggers. What makes one trigger better than another? And why are these, the trigger creep and reset and things like that, why is that so important? Thank you.
Hello, Eric, a relatively new listener. Thank you. Thank you for finding my show, for listening to my show, and for calling in this question. By the way, if you want to call in a voicemail, my number is 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. Or go to handgunworld.com and click the Call Me button. Okay, Eric. I like this question. What makes one gun better than the other? And then he has a question about triggers. And why is that? That's so important. So really, it's two questions. All right. What makes one gun better than another? The answer to that question, Eric, is I don't know. I don't know. Because you know what? They are almost all the same. And I say I don't know on purpose because you talk about a bar fight argument. That's it. What makes one gun better than the other? Or striker fired versus 1911. Or 9mm versus 45. All those are arguments that are just never ending. And have you ever noticed those kinds of arguments? That eventually they can just bore you. But they also can literally start a bar fight or start the separation of a friendship. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. You never know. Some people might take that stuff that serious. But, okay. Now, let me be somewhat serious here and answer Eric's question. What makes one gun better than the other? I'm not quite sure what Eric is asking, if he's talking about quality of manufacturing, if he's talking about accuracy, reliability, what have you. I don't know. It's kind of a general question. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a multi-part answer. And then I'm going to let you decide. Again, I say I don't know the answer to that question, but I'm going to tell you how to figure it out. All right, once again, what makes one gun better than the other? I don't know. But I will tell you how you can figure that out. First of all, if it's a major reputable manufacturer, they make good quality guns. And when I say a reputable major manufacturer, I'm talking about not someone brand new on the block because you're not really quite sure what their quality is like. I'm talking about a gun that's been proven in law enforcement and military use. How about, let's put it that way. Or even in competition use. So I think the three criteria you can use: how well has it performed in law enforcement use? How well has it performed in military use? And do major competitors use it, and how well has it performed in competition matches? I would say, in terms of quality, that's one way you can figure it out. Now I'm going to come up with other ways that you can figure it out as well. So I'm talking about, well, you know what? Let's start with one of the most popular handguns out there, which is Glock. Glock is used probably still by over 80% of law enforcement agencies in the United States, and it's used internationally, and it's, you know, Glocks have performed very, very well for law enforcement throughout the last few decades. All right, Smith & Wesson M&P. Smith & Wesson M&P is being adopted by a lot of law enforcement agencies. For some law enforcement agencies, Glock just didn't cut it for them anymore, and they wanted something more ergonomically friendly. And I got to tell you, Smith & Wesson M&Ps, they are more ergonomically friendly than Glocks. Now, does that mean that they shoot better than Glocks? Not necessarily. Does it mean they're more accurate? Not necessarily. Does it mean that that they're the right gun for you? Well, maybe, maybe not. I will say that a Smith & Wesson M&P feels more comfortable in my hand than a Glock does. And for some people, that's true. But you know what? That's not my only criteria. Nor do I think it should be your only criteria. You want to know what kind of bothers me quite a bit? And I inject my opinions on this show, but you know what bothers me? What bothers me is when I read or hear things from people in the gun community that say things like, just pick the gun that fits the best in your hand. I don't necessarily agree with that. Just pick the gun that fits best in your hand. A gun can fit great in your hand, but everything else about the gun might be wrong for you. You know, the caliber might be wrong, the controls might be wrong, the size might be wrong. You know, there's a lot of things about the gun. The trigger, I'm going to talk about Eric's trigger question coming up in a little while. So just because it fits well and feels well in your hand, feels nicely in your hand, does not mean that that's the one that you should buy. Okay, or doesn't mean that that makes one gun better than the other. They're all pretty accurate. Smith & Wesson M&Ps, they're very accurate. Springfield XD. Springfield XDs have been out a long time, and they're proven. I'm not a huge fan of them because they have a high bore access. Excuse me, bore axis. Access. No, that's not what I meant to say. A high bore axis. A-X-I-S. Axis. In other words, they sit pretty high in my hand. When I grab that pistol and I get my grip as high up on the tang of the pistol as I should, or as I can, and that's what you should do, is get your grip up as high as you can. The Springfield XD, that the bore of the barrel just still sits quite a bit above my hand. For me, it means more muzzle flip, and it means more perceived recoil. Now, it might be different for you, but I cannot control the gun as well when I have a high bore axis. Then when I have a low bore axis, I can do a lot better with it. Glocks and M&Ps have a nice low bore axis. Both of them sit low in my hand. Again, when I grip that pistol, and go to my YouTube video, How to Grip a Pistol. How to Grip a Glock or Any Pistol is the name of my YouTube video. Just search Handgun World on YouTube and you'll find my channel. And look at that. I demonstrate there how I grip pistols and how it works very well for me. So I like the lower bore axis. In other words, they feel like they sit lower in my hand of Glocks and M&Ps. Some people like Springfield XDs. For some people, the XDs and the XDMs are a terrific gun. Now, the XDMs have a great grip. I really like the XDM grip. And for some people, that's a big deal. I mean, the grip texture is what I'm talking about. The texture. Well, the grip feels good, too. It's ergonomically friendly. You know, I don't think that the XD, for me, is as ergonomically friendly as the M&P. I would give the M&P an edge over the Springfield in terms of ergonomics. But I sure like the grip texture of the XD. So that's one way you can figure it out. One way you can figure out what makes one gun better than the other is you can analyze the grip. You can analyze how it feels. That is one of the criteria. But another thing that you have to examine is how the gun operates. In other words, what buttons and levers are on the gun that you need to use to operate the gun? Are you with me? Here's what I mean by that. What I mean, the manual of arms. How do you operate everything about the gun, the handgun? Everything about that pistol, how do you operate it? In other words, Sig Sauer. Let's talk about Sig Sauers. Let's talk about their service pistols, not their 1911s, but their service pistols, like the Sig 226, the Sig 229, the 220. The guns that are typically used by law enforcement or military. Again, I'm not a huge fan of SIGs. Now, some of you might be. For some of you listening to this show, a SIG is perfect, and it's exactly what you like. The SIG 226 was the first handgun I ever owned. I didn't own it for very long. Only owned it for a few months because I couldn't get it to work for me. And it doesn't mean I couldn't get it to be reliable. Once again, here's what did not work for me about the SIG, but it might work for you. First of all, way too high of a bore axis. I think it sits up higher on my hand than the Springfield XD does. I don't like decocking levers, and I don't like decocking guns. If I'm going to have a gun with a hammer on it, like most of the SIGs, I mean, I know that SIG just came out with a striker-fired pistol, but, you know, 99% of all their guns are, their handguns are hammer-fired guns. I don't like decocking levers. And I don't like to decock a pistol, and the reason being is because, and this is where we talk about triggers. The trigger on a Sig Sauer pistol and other brands that use DASA triggers, double action slash single action, that first trigger pull is a very long, hard double action trigger pull. Okay, and I don't like that. You know why? Because the first trigger press is different than all the rest of them. After the gun fires once, it's in single action mode. And boy, I sure love that single action. So, Eric, one thing you can do when you're analyzing triggers, you need to decide, do you like the same consistent trigger press every time? Or can you live with a real long, hard trigger press on the first shot and then a shorter, lighter on subsequent shots like that? To me, that throws me off. I like consistency and simplicity. I'll say that again. I like consistency and simplicity. So it's why I don't care for Sig Sauer service pistols. Now, let me tell you something about SIGs. For concealed carry and and for service pistols, they're great. I mean, they're great quality guns. You know, SIG 226, a SIG 229, the quality on those is terrific. The build quality and the accuracy of a SIG is fantastic. And even my SIG 1911, I like. For the money and for a production 1911, it's an excellent, excellent gun. It's an excellent handgun. For me, they just don't work. So what makes one gun better than another, which was Eric's original question, and of course the topic of this podcast? A lot of things come into play. So you have to analyze, how does that gun function? What kind of bells and whistles does it have on? What kind of levers does it have on? I also don't like where a lot of decocking levers are placed. A lot of decocking levers are placed where my thumb accidentally can press the decocking lever, or sometimes I get confused. I get confused between the decocking lever and the slide lock lever. So, and I don't like that. I don't like that. I want one lever and one lever only to be on the left side of the pistol. Or if you're a left-hander and you have an ambidextrous pistol, then it's on the other side. Now, one thing nice about Smith & Wesson M&Ps, Smith & Wesson M&Ps have the slide lock lever on both sides of the pistol. So it's ambidextrous. Now, that might, for you, make one gun better than the other. If you're a left-hander and you don't want to modify a gun built for a right-hander, get one that's ambidextrous, like a Smith & Wesson M&P. Or any gun that where you can switch the levers around. Okay, that is that's a disadvantage of Glock. One of the disadvantages of Glocks. Well, now you can switch back and forth the slide magazine release button, but you can't switch the slide lock back and forth. So, you know, other manufacturers have an edge. Manufacturers that allow you to do that or ship the gun where the slide lock and slide release is ambidextrous, that makes, at least for that feature, it makes that gun better than some of the others, doesn't it? However, I think too many levers, too many buttons, too many indicators and things like that make a pistol more difficult to use. It under stress, and keep in mind, a real self-defense encounter. And again, I talk about self-defense on this show. Okay, we don't talk about being offensive with a pistol. We don't talk about causing trouble with a pistol. We certainly don't. I don't talk about killing people with a pistol. I don't believe in that. This is self-defense only. And I do believe that every human being has the right to defend themselves when your life is literally in danger. In that kind of a very high-stress situation, it is my opinion that you want the most simple, easy-to-use platform without a lot of levers and things like that to have to worry about. And as most of you know, I'm not a huge fan of having a safety that has to manually be disengaged. Although, I'm going to get to that in a little bit. All right, because for some people it might work, and I'll explain why. So, I don't like guns that have a lot of stuff on them. Like, a lot of guns have loaded chamber indicators, right? And a loaded chamber indicator is this, it sticks up above the top of the slide. Okay? So you got this little thing, whatever you call it, I don't know, but it sticks up over the top of the slide when the gun is loaded. And the theory is, well, you can feel that to tell if your gun is loaded. Well, you know what? There's a lot of other ways that you can tell whether your gun really has a round in the chamber or not. And besides that, I wouldn't rely strictly on a loaded chamber indicator. Okay? Some loaded chamber indicators are done by sight, but what happens if it's completely dark outside? We just taught Ben and I just taught a night class recently. A little hard to see that hole in the slide to see if the chamber is loaded in the pitch black darkness, isn't it? Okay, there are ways that you can manually tell and feel. You can do a press check, and you can actually feel to see if there is a round inside the chamber. I do like what Glock does. Glock makes the extractor and the loaded chamber indicator double to be the same thing. In other words, with Glock, if that extractor is protruding outside the right side of the slide a little bit, then it's loaded. If it's flat and flush against the slide, then there's not a gun, not a round in the chamber. But once again, I wouldn't rely just on that. Okay, but loaded chamber indicators, I think, is a doodad that, you know, I've analyzed it and researched it, and I just can't see the need for it, because there's plenty of other ways to tell what kind of condition that your pistol is in. If you come to one of our training classes, we'll teach you. But, you know, you can retract the slide just a little bit. You can stick your pinky, put your pinky inside the ejection port, and you can feel if there is a live round in the chamber or not. And you can do that in the dark. You can do that in the light. Okay? in the daylight, you can actually look inside there when you retract your slide just a little bit, and you can tell whether the pistol is loaded. So, again, that's one of those doodads that I think can break, and I'm not going to rely on it anyway. Besides that, I don't like anything protruding above the top of my slide. Because when I have to clear a malfunction, especially a nasty malfunction, to me, I think either clothing or my hand can get snagged on that, and that could hurt. All right, I might run my hand over that slide, and there's a loaded chamber indicator that's sticking up, possibly, and I might cut my hand. So, you know, that's one thing that I'm not really crazy about. You know, and the reason I say that is if you have a malfunction where the gun fails to extract and there's still a round that's inside the chamber when it tried to feed another round, and now you got a double feed and it's a nasty malfunction, I would say there's a pretty good possibility that that loaded chamber indicator could still be sticking up. And then when you got to rack the slide to try to clear that malfunction, I don't know. I just think it can be somewhat problematic. So I'm not huge on that. Again, it adds a little bit to the complexity of the pistol, which I don't care for. So, Eric's question, how do you tell if one gun's better than the other? I like simplicity, and I like extreme functionality. But I'm a real big fan of simplicity, and the fewer motions I have to go through to get that gun ready to fire, the better off I think I am, and it makes it a better gun. Now, if you're talking about build quality, well, you know, if you're talking about build quality, today's common polymer service-style pistols, and I'm talking about XDs, M&Ps, Glocks, Rugers, like the Ruger SR series, Tauruses, you know, guns that are the plastic wonders, right? The plastic wonders, the guns that most law enforcement typically have. I'm not talking about like a Sig Sauer. You know, I'm talking about the polymer guns. You know, in terms of actual build quality, I'm not going to say that they're not quality guns. They're very quality guns. And they'll last forever. Most of them will probably outlast their owners and get passed on to kids and grandkids. So they're durable. But in terms of fit and finish, if that's what you're going to use to judge whether one gun is better than the other, then I got to tell you, there are some 1911s out there where their fit and their finish is far superior to any production polymer service pistol that you can go and buy off the market. I mean, you know, you can take a custom Nighthawk 1911 or a Les Bear 1911, and the build quality on those is outstanding. I mean, I really like what Nighthawk does with their pistols. You know, if you can afford them, you know, there's one gunsmith that builds that pistol from start to finish. And it's a super high quality firearm. And the fit and the finish is just absolutely outstanding. You're going to pay for it, right? You're going to pay a lot of money for it. But there's, you know, that thing just oozes of quality. Same with a Les Bear or an Ed Brown. And even for a production 1911, the Dan Wesson 1911s. Are super, super high quality. Okay? And then slightly below that, in terms of actual build quality, you got your Springfields and you got your Kimbers and your Smith & Wessons. Those are great 1911s, though. They're excellent 1911s. If I were to hold one of those guns next to my Glock and ask which one's got a better build quality, those 1911s that I just mentioned are probably going to win. They're going to win hands down. But here's the question. Let me ask you all a question. Does that make it a better gun? Well, maybe, maybe not. And the reason I say is because you might have a gun of very, very high build quality, but if you can't operate it, if you can't manipulate it quickly and fast and accurate, if you can't put all those together, it's not a better gun for you. Okay? All right, 1911s. A 1911 style pistol is going to have that manual thumb safety. It's also going to have the grip safety that has to be depressed. And Eric, if you go back and listen to some of my older shows, as a matter of fact, go to handgunworld.com and search safeties. And I did a whole show on safeties that I won't repeat on this podcast, but I'm not a big, huge fan of having to depress a manual safety to make the gun fire. To me, that's just one unnecessary extra step that I have to go through to defend my life when somebody wants to kill me. I'm just not going to do that. All right? I want a point-and-shoot gun, because that's most likely what I'm going to have to do. Revolvers. Let me talk about revolvers. Maybe a revolver might be better for you, for some people, than a semi-automatic. You know, some people just like revolvers. Some people don't want to have to mess around with magazines. They don't want to have to maintain magazines. They don't want to have to mess around with magazines. They don't want to have to, you know, change springs in magazines. And as we all know, in a semi-automatic pistol, the magazine is one of the weaker points of the gun anyway and causes a lot of malfunctions. Some people don't like that, so they're a revolver enthusiast, and they carry revolvers. And for them, a revolver is a better gun because that's what they prefer. And revolvers are literally point-and-shoot weapons. However, don't buy into the lie that revolvers never malfunction. They do. They do. I've seen a revolver totally lock up. Just totally lock up on the shooter, where it was completely unusable, unfixable, and it had to be taken to a gunsmith. Okay, that does happen. Yes, it's rare. Yes, it's rare. But I have seen a revolver malfunction, and they can malfunction. So this you know, five for sure concept of revolvers, I don't completely agree with. Some people say, well, you know, a snub-nosed revolver, you got five rounds for sure. Versus, you know, 15 rounds with a semi-auto that may or may not work. I don't buy that completely. But there's a lot of great things about revolvers. There's no slide that can come out of battery and cause the gun not to fire. So in other words, if somebody's on top of you, for example, let's say they're laying on the ground, and you're laying on the ground, and they're on top of you, and they're trying to kill you, you can stick that revolver into the bad guy's belly or chest and press the trigger and not have to worry about it malfunctioning. A semi-automatic, you know, well, there's a chance. There's a chance that that slide might be pushed out of battery a little bit and then the gun won't fire. So think about that. So maybe that makes a revolver a better gun for you. Disadvantages of those lightweight snub-nosed revolvers, they're awful to shoot, especially with .357 Magnum rounds. I was over at Sparks Firearms in San Antonio recently. I stopped in there. And Ben Branham was working there, by the way, at the time that I stopped in. So shout out to Ben Branham. He is, Ben's my good friend. He also is the host of the Modern Self-Protection podcast. And we teach quite a few classes together. And you've heard Ben on this show before. Matter of fact, he was on the last episode. And they had this new Smith & Wesson scandium revolver with like a titanium cylinder or something like that. And it weighs 10 ounces. Okay, it's a .357 Magnum revolver, 10 ounces. Now, to me, that's a horrible gun. Now, that's just my opinion. But, you know, Eric's question, what makes one gun better than the other? I think that's a horrible gun. You know why? It's great to carry. It's fantastic to carry. I challenge anybody to shoot five rounds of high-powered .357 Magnum defense loads out of that gun. I challenge you to do it and call it a pleasant experience. Now, why is that bad? You know what? Even 38s in that gun won't feel very good. And you know what that does? Is it causes people not to practice enough. So I think that's a bad gun. So one criteria you might want to use, Eric, is can you see yourself practicing a lot with this gun? So what makes one gun better than the other? Well, can you see yourself practicing and training a lot with it? I'm a big believer in practicing and training. Can you see yourself doing it? If you buy a Pocket 380, it might be a good gun, but can you see yourself taking a two-day training class with your Pocket 380? Can you do it with a little 10-ounce, 12-ounce snub-nose revolver? Can you see yourself going to the range and firing 150 rounds through your pistol and then handing it to your friend and he fires another 150, or you hand it to your girlfriend or wife or your husband and they fire another 150 and everybody goes home with a smile on your face, on their face. Can you see that happening? I can't see it happening with a 10-ounce Smith & Wesson revolver or even an 8 or 9-ounce pocket 380 gun. All right? So think about that. So I would much rather step up in gun, and what I mean is up in size and shootability, than have something little and tiny. I'll give you an example, my Smith & Wesson M&P Shield. I think is a great gun. I think the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield, particularly in 9mm, I think it's one of the best buys on the handgun market today. Absolutely, hands down, one of the best purchases. Why? I can't sing the praises of this gun enough. Okay, first of all, with the 8-round magazines, it's a 9-round gun. It's not optimal, but I don't mind 9 rounds. I think I can get the job done in 9 rounds. Okay, that's at my minimum. 9 rounds is at my minimum, but it's very thin. It's very well built. You know what the greatest thing is about the Smith & Wesson Shield in 9mm? I think it shoots like a big gun, and that's what I like about it. It's comfortable. Could I see myself taking a 2-day course with this gun? Yes. Yep, could I see myself going to the range and shooting 150 rounds and enjoying it? You betcha. Absolutely. Is this gun accurate? Yep. Is it very well built? Yep. And guess what? It doesn't cost much. You can get them for around $400, brand new. What's not to like? And this thing carries like a dream. It's extremely thin. Right now I'm carrying it appendix style in my Concealment Solutions ASP 2.0. That's ASP. That stands for Appendix Specific Platform version 2.0. And Jason Christensen's done a great job. A great job building that appendix holster. If you like appendix carry, check that out. Go to ConcealmentSolutions.com and look at the ASP 2.0. And no, they are not a sponsor. But I just happen to use his products, and I like them. I like them very much. I think his products are extremely well built, very functional. Jason puts a lot of thought into everything, and his customer service is outstanding. And so I give him the testimonial. And I don't give Jason a testimonial because he sponsors me, because he does not. I just give him a testimonial because I use his products. Yes, he has sent me some products complimentary. And there are some products of his I've paid for. Matter of fact, I paid for this ASP 2.0. In fact, you know what? Doing this podcast is reminding me I have to order one for my Glock 26 pretty soon. I haven't gotten around to doing that. And I sure like carrying my Glock 26 appendix style. So, terrific. Anyway, so what makes one gun better than the other? I really like the Shield. The Smith & Wesson Shield, Eric, because, first of all, this gun does just about everything well. It's never malfunctioned on me. I think I've given it about a 300-round trigger job so far. As you know, I believe in giving every gun a 1,000-round trigger job. Every gun I own, a 1,000-round trigger job. And if you want to know what that is, go to handgunworld.com and search 1,000-round trigger job. I did a whole podcast on that. This one, I have not had a chance. Lately, because of what's been going on with me for the last 6 months, haven't had a chance to get to the range enough to give this a 1,000-round trigger job. But not one single malfunction. Magazines are good quality. Build quality is good. I've now got Trijicon HD night sights with an orange front sight that I used at the night class that Ben and I taught last week. They worked great for me. So maybe that's a criteria that you might use to determine what makes one gun better than another. All right, I have more to say on this subject, but let's take a quick break and I'll be right back.
An Australian law enforcement officer called their gun registration, quote, an elaborate system of arithmetic with no tangible aim. They also called its crime control use a fallacy. New Zealand police call their gun registration system useless. Canadian registration has cost 1,600% more than originally projected, and a top Canadian cop said it does nothing to take one illegal gun off the street. And in Germany, some people estimate that upwards of 80% of all guns there are still not registered. So why do some senators, and some presidents for that matter, think that it will work in America? Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
All right, during the break, I want to make a very special thank you to all of you who have been using my Amazon store account to make all of your Christmas purchases. There must be some of you, or quite a few of you, doing it because December may end up being the best month I've ever had. October was the best month I've ever had, and I put that up on my Facebook page. But by the time December's over, it might beat October's record. So thank you. If you're going to purchase something on Amazon, and you're going to do it either for yourself or do some Christmas shopping, it would really help me out and help support my show. And if you like what I do here, go to handgunworld.com and use my Amazon link. The way you find it is by going to handgunworld.com and clicking the Amazon store, and you will find my link. And if you'd save that link and just every time you make a purchase, purchase it through my link, then guess what? It helps me out. Amazon sends me a small little commission for doing that. Also want to talk about, there's a little bit of time, but not much, to take advantage of the early bird specials on two classes that Ben and I are teaching in 2015. In May, we're going to Sioux Falls, South Dakota to teach a two-day Beyond Concealed Carry class. You have till December 31st to take advantage of the early bird special. And we are going to unite with Glenn Tate, the author of the book series 299 Days, once again. And we're going to team up with one or two members of his team. And we're going to teach Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced again in the Seattle area, up in Squim on the Olympic Peninsula at Fort Discovery. It was awesome. So we're doing that in August. So for everybody who wanted to go to that class that we were doing with Glenn Tate, if you wanted to go last year and couldn't make it because we were sold out months in advance, hurry up. And you can save money on all these courses by being an early bird and signing up for either one of these courses by the end of December. So check that out on the page. And don't forget about our Shooters Club. Some of you email me and say, boy, Bob, I tell you what, I sure like what you say and what Ben says, and I'd like to take one of your classes, but I can't travel to some of the places that you go to. I get that. Videos are not as good as a training class, but I think they're the next best thing. And so if you want to watch good instructional videos, please become a member of our Shooters Club. Ben and I have put together a special website only for members. It's a member-only website where we've got somewhere between 20 and 30 instructional videos on shooting already on there. It's called ShootersClubMembers.com. That's the website, ShootersClubMembers.com. Or you can find it if you're already on HandgunWorld.com. Just click the Shooters Club page and it'll get you there. All right, so $75 a year, or we have an $8 a month option. And you can watch those videos. And you're going to be part of an exclusive club because only members get to see and listen to. I got both audio and video podcasts up on the Shooters Club. Only members get to do it, so check that out. Okay, that's the end of the break. Let's get into the second part of the podcast.
An exciting training opportunity is coming to Sioux Falls on May 16th and 17th, 2015, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. This 16-hour course is designed for the concealed carrier who is slightly more advanced but has never had any formal training outside of the CCW course. We start with the basics of handgun safety and marksmanship and quickly progress to some basic dynamic movement and defensive scenarios. Some scenarios would include shooting from cover and proper use of cover, shooting on the move, shooting steel on the move, defending hallways, one-handed shooting, the art of making hits quickly out of the holster, shooting a hostage taker, and more. You will shoot a minimum of 500 rounds of ammunition. Bring a quality handgun with at least 3 magazines, holster, belt, and magazine pouches. Revolvers and .22 caliber pistols are welcome. Both Bob and Ben are NRA-certified pistol instructors and have been for several years. Bob has been the host of the Handgun World podcast for 4 years and has over 120 hours of training under his belt. Ben has several years of Marine combat experience and several years of carrying a gun as an armored car driver. This class will be held in Sioux Falls, May 16th and 17th, 2015, from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. both days. Cost is $350 per person, or sign up by December 31st and save $50. Look for the training link at handgunworld.com.
Okay, the second question that Eric asked in his voicemail was about triggers. And why is all that stuff so important? Well, first of all, that one I think is a little easier to answer. Let's face it, the trigger is the heart of the gun. I mean, that's the heart of the gun. Good, accurate, and fast shooting really comes down to mostly good trigger control. And are you good at manipulating that trigger? This is why I said earlier in the podcast, how many of you have ever heard when you're listening to somebody like a trainer, or you're listening to somebody who is a gun writer or whatever, okay, how many of you have heard them talk about this gun has too much trigger creep or too much stacking, or they don't like the reset, you know? Some triggers just, you know, when you start to press the trigger a little bit, it just feels real crunchy. It feels like it just kind of stacks up and feels real crunchy before it actually breaks and fires the pistol. And that irritates a lot of people, and it irritates me too. Now, I've learned by teaching enough classes and also by being a student, I've been a student in a lot of classes as well, I've learned that under pressure, I don't seem to notice the trigger creep and the stacking too much. All right? So that's something I really don't notice that much, but it does irritate some people and they don't like it. So maybe that's what you, maybe that's a criteria that you use, Eric, to judge a trigger. I like the same trigger pull every single time, whether it's a 1911 single action trigger, whether it's what Glock calls their safe action, or any of the triggers on the M&P guns, or the XD guns, or the Ruger SR series, you know, and some of the Tauruses out there, they have the same trigger pull every time. So does a revolver. Well, a double-action-only revolver, anyway. Now, if you have some revolvers, you know, some revolvers have a hammer, have an exposed hammer, and you can cock the hammer, and you can shoot that revolver in single action. And so you might have two different trigger pulls depending on whether you choose to shoot it double action or shoot it single action. But I like to have the same trigger pull every time. It's consistency. It's consistency of training. I don't like to have a tremendous amount of take up. Now, what does that mean? It means how far does that trigger travel before it fires the gun? I don't like a whole lot of it. I can deal with most of the modern service pistols out there, but there are some that really have a tremendous amount of take-up, and I really just don't like that. Your mileage might vary. You might not mind it. I'm not a big fan of it. Matter of fact, the Glock is a little too much for some people. Some people don't like the take-up in a Glock pistol trigger. Now, that's the factory trigger. You can drop in and you can modify that gun with all kinds of different triggers to make it, you know, to make it work for you and not have quite so much trigger take up and things like that. But then again, I wouldn't carry that gun because it's got a modified trigger, and that's a whole other story. Now, reset. Some people like to argue, but I'm a big fan of shooting to reset, and what that means is after the first shot. Now remember, the first shot I'm going to have to go through all that take up. But after I fire the first shot, I only let the trigger out to the point where it resets and allows me to fire the gun a lot. And I like that reset to be crisp, and I like it to be very obvious. And that's a big advantage that I give to Glocks. Although I'll tell you what, XDs, they have a real nice reset. And why do I do that? Well, first of all, it shortens the trigger pull. Okay, I'm only letting it out part of the way until it resets the gun so I can fire it again. So it shortens it. In my opinion, a shorter trigger press means that I can fire faster and possibly even more accurate. Some people will teach you to take your finger completely off the trigger. you know, after each shot, come off the trigger and then back on it again. That hasn't worked for me. I've tried it. Hasn't worked for me. Might work for you, and maybe reset means nothing to you, but to me it means a lot. And a Glock's reset is so positive and crisp that not only can I feel it, but sometimes I can even hear it. XDs have a real nice reset. The new triggers on the M&P models that are out in production now, the Smith & Wesson M&Ps, are pretty decent. The old triggers on M&Ps were horrible. They had a tremendous amount of take-up, and they didn't have much of a reset at all. It was real mushy. Okay, but they've really improved that. I have a Springfield M&P 9 compact that is terrific. And not a Springfield, excuse me, a Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm compact. Love the trigger on that thing. Same with the M&P Pro competition gun. Both of them out of the box from the factory with real good triggers. The other part of the trigger I don't like is I don't like a lot of over-travel. Over-travel means after the gun fires, how much further does that trigger travel before it stops? I don't like a lot of over-travel. The very first M&P models, boy, they had a lot of over-travel too. Smith & Wesson has changed that, and they've improved it. So that's one reason why I highly recommend M&P guns now, is because their triggers are I wouldn't say outstanding, but the triggers are pretty decent now, even out of the box. And, of course, there are a lot of aftermarket triggers that you can put in. Again, be real careful with that. Just be real careful with that if it's going to be your carry gun. So, what's the importance of triggers, Eric asks. Again, I like that positive reset. I don't like a lot of take-up, and I don't like a whole lot of over-travel. The trigger pull weight doesn't really mean much to me. It doesn't affect me that much. Sure, a 1911 trigger is far superior than most all other triggers on the market. A very well-built, finely-tuned 1911 trigger, you just can't beat it. I mean, you just can't. I mean, how do you beat a nicely, finely tuned 1911 trigger? Especially some of the triggers on some of the custom guns. Do any of you own any Nighthawks or Les Bear or Ed Brown? Custom triggers. I mean, let me tell you what, those things are phenomenal. But even on the Dan Wessons that come out, even on some of the Springfields, Kimber, even though some people are not huge Kimber fans, some are, and I got to tell you, Kimbers have pretty decent out-of-the-box triggers. But it's just hard to beat that 1911. It's got a short reset. It doesn't have much take-up at all. It doesn't have a whole lot of over-travel. A lot of triggers are adjustable on a 1911. Not so much so on striker-fired guns. But the actual weight doesn't matter. So if I have a striker-fired gun in my hand with an 8-pound trigger and another one with a 6-pound trigger, I'm not going to notice much of a difference. That's just me. The creep, the stacking, the over-travel and the reset is going to mean a lot more to me than the actual weight. A lot of people get hung up on the weight of the trigger pull. Well, man, you could give me a gun with a 4-pound trigger, but if everything else is wrong with the trigger, I'm not going to like it. If it's got a lot of take-up, if it's got a lot of over-travel and the reset is horrible, I don't care if it's a 4-pound or a 6.5-pound trigger. I'm just not going to like it. And how crisp is the break? You know, in other words, right at that very point where the gun fires, how crisp is that? One way you can tell is when you're dry firing your pistol, watch your front sight. Watch your front sight. Get a good proper grip on the pistol and dry fire it. Okay, double check to make sure it's unloaded and dry fire it. What does your front sight do? Does it move? Does it wiggle? If your front sight moves and wiggles and there's no way to stop it, then that means two things. Either your trigger control is terrible, and you need to work on your trigger control. But once you got your control down, make sure you're not jerking that trigger, okay? But if you're really good with your trigger control and that front sight still wiggles, well, you may have to work on that trigger a little bit. Now, some guns, just through lots of practice and 1,000-round trigger jobs, smooth up, or even after 2,000 or 5,000 or 10,000 rounds, those triggers get a lot smoother and a lot better. So maybe when you first buy the gun and you dry fire it, your front sight might bounce all over the place. But that's because you're not used to the gun and you haven't broken it in well. Once you get it broken in and you're used to it and you've trained with it, again, give it a chance, by the way. Give it a chance. When you find a gun you really like, give the trigger a chance. Give it a chance. Give all the parts a chance to wear in and smooth out. And give yourself a chance to get used to it and train with it. Would you agree? That's a big deal. A lot of people talk about the break-in periods of a handgun. In fact, for some of them, that's a criteria of what makes one gun better than the other. I think that's a bunch of horse pucky. Give me a break. You don't like the break-in period of a gun? You know, and I believe the shooter needs just as much break-in as the gun does. People complain because they have to shoot 250 rounds or 500 rounds to break in the pistol. So? I think it takes you at least 250 to 500 rounds to get fairly proficient with your pistol anyway and to know how it shoots and to get used to it and know where it, you know, what you can do with it. I think that, my personal opinion is that's one of the sorriest arguments for not buying a pistol that I've ever heard. Break-in period. What a sorry argument. Really, I mean, seriously. You know, you need to shoot a decent amount of rounds just to make sure your gun is reliable also. So what makes one gun better than another? I'll get back to that for a minute. Reliability, since I just talked about reliability. Hey, I don't care how good a gun is built. I don't care what the build quality. The build quality can be fantastic, but if it's not reliable, if you got malfunctions all the time that are not your fault or the magazine's fault, it's not a good gun. I don't care how much you paid for it. I don't care how well built it is. I don't care if it's handmade to a T. If you have too many malfunctions, it's not a good gun. Now, malfunctions can be caused by a lot of things. Malfunctions can be caused by the shooter. It can be caused by the magazine. They can be caused by the ammunition. They can be caused by the gun that's not functioning properly. There's a lot of reasons for malfunctions, but I believe if you start to have a pattern of a lot of malfunctions, it's hard for me to say exactly how many. If it's a pattern, if you are a good shooter or you hand your gun to a good shooter, and if that really good shooter experiences malfunctions, then it might not be the shooter in that case. It could be the magazines. It could be the ammo. It could be something that's fundamentally wrong with the gun, with the pistol. But if it's a pattern of malfunctions and you cannot fix it, get rid of the gun. It's not a good gun. It's not a good gun for you. Somebody else might own it and never have a malfunction. Hallelujah. If that's great, then it's a good gun for them. But that's one of the other criteria. But back to trigger again. Triggers, again, they're the heart and they're the soul of the pistol, in my opinion. So, Eric, hopefully that answers that part of your question also. In summary, I'm getting ready to close here, but in summary, I'd like to say that there's really no clear-cut answer to Eric's question about what makes one gun better than the other. But I hope that I've laid out some things for you to think about and to analyze. At the end of the day, there's no way to determine which gun is going to be right for you. You have to examine all these criteria, figure out what's important, and then find the gun that matches most of the criteria. And you're never going to find the perfect gun. Let me just say that right up front. You're never going to find the perfect gun. Are you with me? How many of you will agree with me on that? I sure hope so. I spent a lot of money and time foolishly trying to find that perfect gun. I was in search of the perfect gun for 3 to 4 years. And I went through a lot of pistols trying to find the perfect gun, and it does not exist. I'm telling you right now, it does not exist. Every gun is going to have some disadvantages. Find the pistol that has the least amount of disadvantages for you and go with that one, because that's what makes one gun better than the other. Think about that. So with that said, I may have forgotten something. I would welcome a voicemail. Again, it might be a few weeks before I can get to it, but I would certainly welcome a voicemail from you, 210-646-1727, or go to handgunworld.com and click the Call Me button. Before I let you go, I got to tell you that I think at this point I'm doing pretty well in my cancer treatments. I'm waiting on the results of some more tests to come back before I start my stem cell transplant. I'm not going to go into a long, drawn-out explanation as to what a stem cell transplant is. If you don't know what that is, Google that. Just Google stem cell transplant. I am going to get an autologous stem cell transplant, which means they're going to take my own stem cells. And there's a way of doing that. I don't have to wait for a donor or look for a donor. All right? But there's a few tests that have to come back for me to be able to proceed. I very much appreciate all the support everybody's giving me. My stem cell transplant's about a 100-day process. So for the next 100 days or so, I'm going to really be going through some pretty tough stuff, okay? So bear with me on that. I will try to get some podcasts out there. I am probably not going to make it to another class until March or April. Probably more like April. So just know that. I have full intention of being at the May class in Sioux Falls with Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society podcast, another one that you should listen to, Polite Society podcast. But once those test results come back, as long as they're good, and keep praying for that, they will begin the pretty long process, long, hard, arduous process of a stem cell transplant. However, most of you know, I'm a strong man of faith. I'm a Christian. I believe in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. I have that faith. Now, some of you don't share that faith with me. That's okay. If you don't share that faith with me, I wish that someday you would show that faith, that you would have that. But if you don't, that's all right. It's okay. This show is not about religion or anything like that. But because of my faith, I do believe that God is with me. And I do believe that God is with my doctors. And my doctors know a lot. Make no mistake about it. My doctors at MD Anderson, they know a lot. They're one of the best in the world, if not the best in the world, in fighting cancer. But I also believe that the good Lord has His divine and spiritual hand upon me. And His will is going to be done. Whether I make it or not, whether I make it through this treatment or I don't make it, His will is going to be done. And I do struggle sometimes, folks, with my faith, and I get negative. I do. I want you to know that I do get negative. A lot of you only hear the positive stuff. You only hear the positive stuff on my podcast and on my Facebook page and places like that. It's because I don't normally make my negativity too public. But there are times where I do get negative. You could ask my wife and some of my close friends. They'll tell you. I think I'm more positive than I am negative, but any human in my situation would get negative. And of course, most of you know my wife is battling ALS, so I got a double whammy. All right? But we'll get through it. And I believe because of the test I'm being given that, you know, it's going to make me a stronger person, and perhaps I'm going to have an amazing testimony when this is all done. I couldn't do it without the support from so many of you. And I can tell that some of you, if you are of faith, you're praying for me. Even if you're not of faith, you're encouraging me. You're putting up Facebook posts. You're sending me emails. And you're sending me voicemails. And you're encouraging me. And I thank you so much for that. When I have a bad day, occasionally I go through my Facebook timeline. And I read all the great stuff and the positive well wishes and the prayers that people are sending towards me. And it perks me up. Or when some of you that have my direct number give me a phone call, it perks me up. Thank you very much. I intend to podcast for quite a while. And I intend to do training classes for quite a while. And to serve my fellow Americans and even international listeners who believe in liberty, who believe in carrying guns for self-defense, and are just all around good people. That's what I believe in, and that's you. And thank you for listening. So, with all that said, once again, have a Merry Christmas. Have a very Happy New Year. And this is Bob Main, another episode of the Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.